Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with the Week in Review for September 19th. The rally on Wall Street continued, thanks to more solid evidence that the global recovery is gaining steam. We didn't need Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke to tell us that the recession is over, as he did this week, because it's been long apparent the economy will have grown in the third quarter. The issue is how strong the recovery will be and will be sustainable, and at least here it was important to have Warren Buffett tell CNBC that there will be no double-dip recession, barring a geopolitical nightmare, of course. Buffett also averred that many of the toxic assets have already been flushed through the system, a significant positive. This week we had a report on August retail sales, up a far better than expected 2.7%, the best pace in 3 years. While industrial production for the same month increased 0.8% in August, housing starts rose. On the inflation front, the core figures for August producer and consumer prices came in at a tame 0.2% and 0.1%, respectively, with the core CPI now down 1.5% over the past 12 months. To beat a dead horse, my attitude hasn't changed when it comes to inflation. Until you can show me wage and pricing pressures, don't waste my time. We are a long ways off from either. The big picture on the economy, however, continues to be all about the consumer, first and foremost, and despite the pickup in August retail sales, fueled in no small part by cash for clunkers, consumer spending will remain punk until the labor outlook brightens. In California, for example, while there are distinct signs the recession is over there as well, the jobless rate hit 12.2%. It's no wonder that with examples like this, savings rates continue to rise as well. But confidence is beginning to return, thanks to the powerful rally on Wall Street. And on Thursday, the Federal Reserve reported that the net worth of American households grew in the second quarter for the first time since the recession began in December 2007. As of this past March, $11 trillion in Americans' net worth had been wiped out, but with stocks rallying big in the second quarter, and now up more than 50% since March, coupled with a firmer housing market and shrinking household debt, our balance sheets look a bit better, $2 trillion better to be exact, and it's a question of when, not if, as to a return of the consumer. Yet, 1 year after the financial crisis began in earnest, where do we really stand? While there is little doubt the worst is over, assuming you're still employed, at the same time the credit windows are still shut and some would argue many banks remain in deep trouble. Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz argues, quote, "In the U.S. and many other countries, the too-big-to-fail banks have become even bigger. The problems are worse than they were in 2007 before the crisis," he told Bloomberg News. "We aren't doing anything significant so far in terms of reform and regulation of financial markets, and the banks are pushing back. It's an outrage," Stiglitz says, "especially in the U.S. where we poured so much money into the banks. The administration seems very reluctant to do what is necessary." Stiglitz concludes, "We're going into an extended period of weak economy, of economic malaise. The U.S. will grow, but not enough to offset the increase in the population. And if workers do not have income, it's very hard to see how the U.S. will generate the demand that the world economy needs." Trader and author Nassim Taleb agrees with Stiglitz, telling the New York Times that the system has grown riskier because extensive government support leads investors to believe government will always prevent major banks from collapsing. Cheap money is allowing the institutions to then make risky loans and trades. The banks will keep the profits when their bets pay off, he said, while taxpayers will swallow the losses when the bets go bad and threaten the system, or the definition of moral hazard. Yes, there are still issues out there, and another one will be highlighted at the coming G20 summit in Pittsburgh, that being protectionism. President Obama's timing on the slapping of a 35% tariff on Chinese-made tires could not have been worse, but it is true that China has been doing some dumping, despite their shrill calls of rampant protectionism on the part of the U.S. China stretches the rules in all manner of areas. China, remember, exports 3 times more to the U.S. than it imports from us. But in this instance, China has thus far adopted a grown-up attitude, as it said it would take complaints to the World Trade Organization. Good. That's what the WTO is for. As to the timing of Obama's move, I just wish he had held a face-to-face with the Chinese at the UN prior to his decision. Instead, Obama was about to address the AFL-CIO, and it was pure politics. Protectionism worldwide would, of course, kill off any recovery, as we've all learned our history lessons on this one. The signs are troubling, but not worth panicking over as yet. I'm just convinced cooler heads will prevail with so much at stake. Speaking of China, foreign direct investment in August rose 7%, a big plus, and the stock market here had rallied back 16% off the lows before a pullback Friday. In the UK, commercial real estate rose in August for the first time in more than 2 years, but retail sales were flat for the month. On the dollar front, last week I said the topic bored me, as well as gold, thus upsetting a few of you. And my bottom line is pretty simple. I do not see the dollar collapsing. In fact, I see it rallying, thus negatively impacting gold at the same time, as well as other commodities. Should we have a trade war, however, then all bets are off. In the meantime, a falling dollar is not only good for U.S. exports, but it can also benefit foreign investments in stocks and bonds. As for gold, it's both the public and speculators moving it these days. So, who wants to talk about healthcare? I saw a number of surveys of doctors this week, with most being split 50-50 when it comes to the seemingly dead public option and or expanding Medicare to cover younger folks. What seems clear, though, is that any bipartisan deal in Congress is officially out with release of the Baucus plan. Senator Max Baucus, Democrat Montana, having finally put forward the Gang of Six's efforts, though without the support of the three Republicans. But President Obama may yet get something to sign by year-end, though only if two simple questions get answered. How does health reform not add to the deficit, and how will it slow the rate of health cost inflation? Until those two issues are answered, and the president hasn't come close to doing so yet, only then can you proceed to talk about the drastic cuts to Medicare that must be enacted or the plan makes zero sense. Then you move on to the cost to employers and employees, etc. In other words, we have a long, long way to go. And now the elephant in the room, Iran. Last week I reiterated that as bullish as I have been on the year in terms of equities, a position from which I have not deviated, barring a positive development on the Iranian front in the next 3 to 4 weeks, I'll be pulling the trigger on my prediction for year-end market returns. I have not as yet, but I ask you, what happened this past week that would have caused me to change my mind? Nothing. While Iran agreed to hold constructive talks with the group of five plus one, the United States, France, Britain, Russia, China, and Germany, President Ahmadinejad continued to say he would not discuss Iran's nuclear rights. Then the Associated Press got hold of the confidential report from the International Atomic Energy Agency that has been withheld by Chief Mohammed El-Baradei, and it reveals that IAEA experts believe Iran has the ability to make a nuclear bomb and worked on developing a missile system that can carry an atomic warhead. The new information contains some of the following. The IAEA's assessment that Iran worked on developing a chamber inside a ballistic missile capable of housing a warhead payload that is quite likely to be nuclear. That Iran engaged in probable testing of explosives commonly used to detonate a nuclear warhead, a method known as a full-scale hemispherical explosively driven shock system. An assessment that Iran worked on developing a system for initiating a hemispherical high explosive charge of the kind used to help spark a nuclear blast. The IAEA also concludes Iran has sufficient information to be able to design and produce a workable implosion nuclear device based on highly enriched uranium as the fission fuel. Meanwhile, President Ahmadinejad said once again on Friday the Holocaust was a, quote, lie. The pretext Holocaust for the creation of the Zionist regime, Israel, is false. It is a lie based on an unprovable and mythical claim, he said. Confronting the Zionist regime is a national and religious duty. If you are Israel, the combination of the above two stories certainly doesn't make you feel any better, even if talks are slated to begin October 1st. But it was curious that Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak said on Thursday, right now, Iran does not have a bomb. Even if it did, this would not make it a threat to Israel's existence. Israel can lay waste to Iran. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he saw eye to eye with his defense minister, though adding, it is certainly a very great danger. But I think that what the defense minister wanted to say, something that I believe, is that the state of Israel will be able to defend itself in any situation. I can say to you that we must make a great effort and are making a great effort to persuade the international community that this problem is not just our problem. Now, this is clearly a lessening of the rhetoric, which makes sense ahead of the talks. At the same time, Israel knows that Iran is following North Korea's model of obfuscation and, like Pyongyang, is just as likely to start talks and then walk out of them, thus buying even more time. But in terms of my own timetable, I will sit back with the rest of you and see what happens at the UN General Assembly, September 23rd through September 30th, and then the succeeding talks. Israel no doubt feels obligated to give the process some time to see if Iran will not just agree to cease enriching uranium, but allow intrusive inspections at all levels in return for support for building a civilian program. And let's face it, the coming weeks may also reveal more about Iran's governing crisis as Tehran was convulsed with further protest on Friday. But Israel is not going to wait until December, or later, as the Obama administration is prepared to do. So with all the above in mind, I'm still targeting November for Israel to launch an attack. But now envision hitting the sidelines in terms of my stock market prediction roughly mid-October. Finally, the amazing rally did continue on the street as the Dow Jones, S&P 500, and NASDAQ all advanced more than 2% and now sit at levels not attained since a year ago during the financial crisis. The S&P is also up 58% since the March lows, while NASDAQ is up an even more stupendous 68%. Around the world, results are similar. I'll be back with you next Saturday, September 26th. Have a great week.